The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com. Hello, welcome to this month's instalment of the Scouted podcast. It's October, which can only mean one thing, the annual release of Scouted 50, the handcrafted list of 50 breakout talents that journalists, analysts, and valued Scouted contributors the world over have voted for and ranked, giving us their top 10. You might not be familiar with the Scouted 50. You might be very familiar as a subscriber to Scouted Notebook, but just for the benefit of all listening, how the Scouted 50 list is built, you might ask. Well, the 50 players featured each year, curated entirely by our in-house team of analysts. And this year that included Lou Davies, Stephen Ganawis, and today's guest, Jake Entwistle. There's no strict criteria for building the list. The only rule that we have is players that who have featured previously can't feature again, as you'd probably expect. So in the 24-25 edition of Scouted 50, you won't find Lamine Yamal, Warren Zaire-Emery, or Evan Ferguson, as they were all included last year. And a little disclaimer here, if you're listening in, you're hoping to hear about Archie Gray or Mikey Moore, for example, or Kendry Pyers, if your favourite wasn't in the list, it's almost certainly because they've been featured extensively in a previous instalment, or they are set to be included in years to come. So let's get into it then. But first, Jake, welcome back to the Scouted Pod. How are things going at HQ since going full time with the rest of the boys? No complaints to the non-existent HR department yet, I hope.
No, I think I'm just about surviving. But you say welcome back as well. I don't know if I've ever been on one of these. So it's good to either make a debut or actually and finally contribute. So yeah, I think I'm still in that honeymoon period of trying to do loads really early to make up for the lost time, but absolutely loving it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about doing loads. There's been a significant churn of really high quality stuff that yourself and the rest of the guys have been putting out. I have so many unread emails that when I'm going here, there, and everywhere on trains, I kind of like to sort of siphon off 5 or 10 that I then just ingest at once from the notebook. That's kind of like a little bit of self-care routine for me. But yes, all the stuff that I've read so far, probably from last couple of weeks, 2 and 3 weeks ago, before this weekend's trip and another 5 or 10 get boxed off, has been of really, really high quality. And again, would fully endorse signing up to the notebook if you're a listener and haven't done so already. But today's episode is about the Scouted 50. And as I said in the introduction, you know, you were one of the experts that helped curate this list of 50 players alongside Lou and Steve. There were a few names in there that I hadn't heard of. There were a few names who I'd never had the opportunity of watching. And then there were many of whom have landed in the top 10 who we're all quite familiar with. Because they're playing at the top level already. And, you know, that includes, you know, 17-year-old Pau Kubasi, who many people will have seen his head plastered all over our social media in promoting the Scouted 50, because unsurprisingly, a 17-year-old central defender starting for FC Barcelona is probably on the fast track to doing something pretty good. We individually submitted our 1 to 10s or our 10 to 1s. And I was just wondering, Jake, if you wanted to get us kicked off with your list, you know, who did you select in your 10 to 1, the cream of the crop of this year's Scouted 50, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to echo that the selection process of the 50, it was very much Lou and Steve throwing names out and then me saying, this guy, I think is good. I've heard of him. He could be in it. So I was still very much early in the process. And the thing is, as well, is like between us all, we know the 50 players in it, but it doesn't have to be like we have to have watched everyone, all of us. So it's good. It's good collaboration that people that are watching other games as well and other players that they have a chance to add them in and sort of make their case. But as for my top 10, I think when I shared it, I was a bit like, you want to just redo it straight away after 2 weeks. It depends when you submit it. But if we're starting from, as I said, not revealing the top picks early, I think my 10, 9 and 8 are all really exciting players and players that I then thought maybe I should have put higher. Number 10 was Giovanni Kanda from Sporting CP, because again, he's 17 years old. Though I think I had a lot of 2007 players in my top 10, which again, the cutoff, I think the only other bit of criteria missing is that anyone, you had to be 2004 or later. So again, any players that may have not have featured had now missed the age cutoff point. But I put Kanda in at number 10 because, again, speaking to Steve, especially in reading sort of his profiles on him, he sort of exploded out of nowhere towards the end of last season, playing at wing back, right wing back in a 3-4-3, which again is sort of seems to be a way to get these really sort of high potential athletic profiles in your team without the burden of needing consistent attacking returns. But I think he's still playing in the front three at times this season. So even got a senior Portugal call up. So he made it because I think, yeah, when you're 17 years old and you're starting in a strong team, getting those senior call ups, then yeah, you deserve to be on high up on the list. And then number 9 was my biggest regret of my list. So I had Alessi Benseguir from Monaco, recently gone down a lot of Morocco rabbit holes about them building one of the most exciting international squads in the world, tipping a potential World Cup win in 2026. And Monaco, again, one of the sort of little tidbits from the list was no team had more players than Monaco in the list. And that's only because if you count people that are on loan. But in terms of players playing for their team, Monaco had the most with 3. And Benseguir at the time, I was really interested in, kept popping up on all of the Monday Night Scouted stuff that I was doing. Displays the traits that I usually love in a player, which is like ball carrying, dribbling, really smooth passing in and around the box. Easy to fall in love with those types of players. But I put him at 9, which again, as I said, if I'd given him a bit more faith or it was 2 weeks later, he would have been higher. And then he maybe would have actually made the top 10. And then number 8 as well was Ori Oskarsson, who recent move to Real Sociedad. He was my sort of first, you know, on Football Manager when like you sign a new director of football or a new scout and you can do recommend signing.
Yes, yeah.
So Oskarsson was my, like, when I was coming back into scouted, I was like, there's this one guy that I keep finding in the data that I think is really cool. We should do stuff on him. Kept like putting little things in the Slack channel. Then got him onto the shortlist, did the interview with Tom detailing his incredible story a bit more. And then obviously the Man City links came through, like they watched him. And then it was a battle between like Porto, Real Sociedad and people like that for his signature. He eventually went to Sociedad from Copenhagen. And again, I think he scored a couple of goals, isn't starting regularly, but he's on there because his profile is like the exact striker profile that everyone wants at the moment. So he made that move, which already sort of bumped him up. But if he can get a consistent run of games in this Sociedad team and they work out how to use him, then I think he's going to really be in that conversation of like, next Haaland, all of that stuff, just because he's got blonde hair and sort of that robust profile. But yeah,
you're talking about the profile there, you know, that everybody wants at the moment in a striker or a number 9. You know, what are sort of the bullet points, the key bullet points for that profile, do you think?
I think it's this sort of like, you've got to be 6'1", not too big, not too small, really strong channel running. Like the physical profile seems to be of increasingly high importance for these low touch center forwards. So again, Haaland is the sort of the golden example of it. Like 8 touches, 4 goals is like his best ever game possible. And you're just using them there to stretch games. And I compared Oskarsson in the shortlist to Havertz, because when I was watching him, he still liked associating play a bit. But then even last season, Copenhagen, at the start of this season, he'd index more into this, don't touch the ball until you're in the box. Run channels. and just get play on like your orthodox side. Like, again, a lot of these strikers play, if you're right footed, you play down the right channel, you run, you bend your run across, come down, receive on your right foot and just smash it at goal. And you basically rinse and repeat. You don't pass the ball. You're there to do the final action. So it's very much built on a physical profile, needing to be fast, needing to be strong. And then it's all about sort of like higher intensity off the ball movement, reaching top speed quickly, and being able to just constantly push back defensive lines or break through in those open channel runs.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think, you know, you're spot on there with the physical profile being something that, that scouts and recruitment departments are now targeting specifically, rather than, you know, a certain player per se. It's more looking at a certain profile. I just wanted to touch on Giovanni Quenda that you had at number 10, because as far as I'm aware, I think you're the only person who had him in the top 10, or at least of the top 10s that I've seen. And he was somebody who stood out last year at the under 17 European Championships. I think he just turned 16 at that point. So again, you know, was still one of the younger players in that cohort. And while he didn't hit the back of the net, I think he only got one assist during the tournament. He was somebody who, coming from that right wing all the way to the final, which in which they were beaten by Italy, was a real, real threat. Just so explosive. And in the actual Scouted 50 write-up, I think he's been described, it'll probably be Steve, depending on, based on what on this term, but he's been described in the write-up as playing bully ball, which I think is pretty accurate. I think I maybe less eloquently, but I described Noni Madueke when he was at PSV, back when we used to do the handbooks, as doing something quite similar, kind of playing like a dodgem car, you know, kind of buffeting off opposition challenges and defenders, and just using superior upper body physicality and mobility to squeeze himself through. He's definitely one of the more striking players. Obviously, he's going to come on leaps and bounds, you'd imagine, playing regularly for Sporting, especially under a coach like Ruben Amorim. And I think he's almost hitting 1,000 minutes already this season, and we're in sort of late October, which, you know, I mean, I don't need to tell you, Jake, and probably a lot of the listeners, but whenever a 17-year-old is doing that, that is when their value, when their reputation just tends to grow exponentially and tends to skyrocket. So, yeah, I think you're just in there ahead of the curve on Giovanni Quenda, I think.
Well, yeah. So I don't know if I'm ahead of the I've just nicked all of the, as I said, just I've got an incredible resource of just seeing all of the behind the scenes writing that we don't always publish as well. So his name's been knocking about in loads of bits. And just again to touch on like Madueke, you've mentioned obviously playing wing back and then being a winger in the future has got a very Saka-esque trajectory to it. Mm. And also I've got this really, I don't know, obsession or strange obsession with like left footers are taking over the game at the moment. So anyone that's like right winger cutting in from the left, they seem to be the best players. All of the top like shot creating actions and all my favorite metrics are dominated by Yamal, Saka, Palmer. Madueke is doing a good job at Chelsea with now we've got a starting spot. So if I see a right winger with a strong athletic profile and, as you said, getting minutes at 17, I think I'd probably lent into my personal biases to put him in that top 10.
Moving on to my top 10 and going using the same format, the same framework that Jake did, going 10-9-8. I went with a player who ended up quite high in the overall Scouted 50 at number 10. And this is mainly because I haven't really watched a lot of Bayern Munich. I know that he's a good player. I know that he's somebody who is probably going to anchor Bayern and Germany's midfield for the next decade, near enough. But I don't know. I struggle to watch Bayern. I just don't find them as interesting as other teams across Europe. And, you know, we all have limited time. But Alexander Pavlovic did make my top 10. He was, I have to admit, a late addition to it. I did have a slight revision, a moment of clarity, an epiphany, if you will, that I did need to have him in there if I wanted to retain any sort of credibility, sort of leaning on what Jake said. As soon as you make this top 10, And it is difficult coming out with a top 10 after from a list of 50 players who they're in there for a reason. They all probably have, or most of them have, a case to be in an individual top 10. But I had Pavlovic as number 10. I've taken some flack for my number 9 pick ahead of Pavlovic, and that's Chris Rigg. And that's, again, because I've watched a lot of Chris Rigg. He is someone who, again, at 17, is playing an awful lot of football for promotion challenging Sunderland in the Championship. He's somebody who I really, really like the look of, can sort of do it all, very box-to-box, very well-rounded. And I think one of the things that I really, really like about Rigg is that it's not about how much he gets right. It's about how little he gets wrong. His security and possession is great. And even though he is among the youngest players in the Championship, and certainly the youngest player in Sunderland's young midfield, he kind of carries himself in a way that, I don't know, exudes authority and exudes control. And I think that is something which, again, when you're only 17, and again, recently turned 17, that is something which stands out massively. My number 8 in my top 10 was similar to Jake, in that you went with a Monaco player. I went with a different Monaco player, and that's George Eleni Kenna. Obviously, a hugely, hugely talented player. Again, we don't need to go into the depth about Monaco's tendency to scout very well from French speaking areas and you know, further afield. He came from Royal Antwerp. They paid €6 million for him from Amiens, and then again, you know, at 16 years old, 17 years old, he was really, really doing, he was pulling up trees basically in Belgium. I think it was 12, 13 goals he scored for Antwerp. And then, you know, moves on to Monaco for €20 million. He's someone who has the capacity to really have a huge impact in French football, I think, because the profile of forward that he is, can really challenge in the air, big, bulky, a kind of like a cannonball at times. That profile tends to do very well at the top level of French football, and especially if you have, you know, a supporting cast around him like Monaco do. So that was the reason that I went with George Eleni Kenna at my number 8. Do you have any thoughts on those three, Jake? I know that you certainly had Pavlovic a little bit higher in your 10.
Well, yeah, just going back to, I'll sort of address them in the order that you addressed them there. So my 7-6 was Pavlovic, Chris Rigg. So revealing that already. So again, the Pavlovic thing is the same as you. I know that he's very good. He comes up on everything that you look for. But again, even reading, again, the reports about how he sort of came out of nowhere, he had to be in there because maybe he'd already broken out in the sense that he was starting for Bayern, got included in the provisional Euro 2024 squad, and think missed out through tonsillitis. So he maybe would have, if he had that tournament in him, he maybe would have been even higher up lists. But yeah, when you're starting at 20 middle of Bayern midfield, and I think, again, in the write-up, I added in an acknowledgement that they bought Pelinha and Pelinha can't play because Pavlovic and Kimmich is the preferred pivot. Again, he's not the same player as Pelinha, but still is tall enough and big enough to have that physical presence that Pelinha would bring. But he's just got this incredible passing range that he's always ticking it forward. Again, I think ranked really highly for all of the progressive pass metrics that you would ever want to see, which again, I didn't think would happen considering he's playing alongside Kimmich. And then Chris Rigg is in my top 10 for similar reasons to why I mentioned for Kenda, because you've got a 2007 born player starting in the middle of a midfield in one of the most physically demanding leagues in the world and doing well. It's not that I've watched hundreds and hundreds and thousands of minutes of Chris Rigg, but my sort of personal criteria that I was building was I'm aware of who he is and what he's doing. And in terms of this being a list of breakout players, someone that's 17 and starting in the Championship in midfield, there's a very good succession line of that pathway being or producing incredible players, i.e. Bellingham, Adam Wharton coming through, even Alex Scott at Bournemouth. people that are playing in the Championship at a very young age get noticed very quickly, and their breakout and their sort of propulsion into the mainstream can be very quick. So he was in there because of that. And then again, brief glimpses of watching him play, very tidy, obviously scored that lovely back heel goal, which again, any display of flair is going to immediately be a tick in my box for that. So again, similar to you, is we can't watch all of these 50 players as much as we'd want, but you have that awareness of things that you look for in a sort of trajectory of a player's career that would define breakout. So yeah, for me, Pavlović and Rig, both in the top 10 because of the fact that what I have seen is very good, but then the environment around them is obviously very conducive to becoming sort of one of the better players, best young players in their league, but also one of the most talked about. And I think Rig himself has been, when he signed his new contract at Sunderland, I think the reports were that he rejected advances from people like Manchester United. So as soon as you've got Premier League interest in you as well, I think there's a chance for Rig this season to be talked about a lot in January and then in the summer. So I think that fits the criteria that I'd built for breakout stars there.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about criteria and stuff like that. For me, when I was deciding on my top 10, I'll go on to my 7 and 6 very shortly, but I wanted it to be players who I felt had a realistic chance of having that breakout season, not necessarily the best players at the best clubs right now. So that's why it might have looked a little bit surprising that, you know, a Sunderland player was above a Bayern Munich player. Again, at the time that I was compiling the list, I wasn't aware of the whole Pavlović sort of dispute or debate in the middle of the Bayern midfield. I was certainly more aware of how important Chris Rigg was at Sunderland, which is why he went in ahead. But Rigg, I think as well, the environment you talked about, players who do pull up trees in the Championship, they do often get fast-tracked and they often become Premier League players. Look at Adam Wharton, for example. As you rightly mentioned, you know, the scope and the global pull of the Premier League as well is so much greater than the rest of the top five European leagues. So the pathway naturally has, you know, a greater propensity to catapult those players from the Championship to the Premier League, as opposed to, you know, a player going from Ligue 2 to Ligue 1, or like the Zweibundesliga to the Bundesliga. You know, I feel like the potential for them to break out is a lot greater. So that's why, for example, I went with Rig in mine, and obviously you went with Rig higher as well. At 7 for me, I went with Samu Omorodion, obviously the striker at FC Porto, and more recently scored, I think, 4 goals in the same game for Spain's under 21s. Watched a fair bit of him for Spain's 21s. Obviously last season he was, you know, another one of these sort of up and coming profiles, and we're talking about striker profiles before, but, you know, aggressive front foot, you know, play off the shoulder strikers in Spanish football, which you don't typically associate with Spanish football. You know, you maybe look at them as having the more diminutive, the flightier sort of players, but Omorodion isn't like that. He is, I think he's been described in the Scouted 50 as a titan, which is pretty accurate, if you ask me. He's a real brute at 6'4". And, you know, the fact that he had, as you were mentioning with Chris Rigg, he had so many suitors over the summer. And to go to FC Porto, which is a nice step where he's going to play regularly, I think, yeah, Samu is on the fast track to ragdolling some really big name central defenders potentially in European competition this season. You know, it's again, it can be a cliche sometimes that, you know, players of his ilk can be you know, very, very strong and very fast, but I think there's also a great intelligence to his game. There's kind of an innate, you know, striker movement that I really like, that does make him very, very Haaland-esque. Yeah, the sign off, I've just found it here. The sign off in Samu Omorodion's his Scouted 50 write up is Samu is the personification of football's most sought after profile right now. And I think that's very, very accurate.
And guess who didn't put him in their top 10?
Why?
Well,
absolutely miss it. That's what I mean. I was too busy looking at Ori Oskarsson.
Well, that's what I mean. I didn't have Oskarsson, and you know, they're both playing La Liga. Well, they were playing La Liga last season, Oskarsson this season. But you know, it's not a case of you know, just because one is in one person's top 10 and the other isn't, doesn't mean that they're necessarily better. It feels like the Rio Ferdinand. Let's just enjoy them, man. Enjoy both of them. Why have we got to compare? Well, because this is Scouted 50 and we're going to compare. We're going to rank.
It's literally a ranking. I was really glad to see that Samu made the top 10 because, as you again highlighted the sign-off there, and we have written, or Steve has written a lot about striker profiles using the Skill Corner data. It's the most lucrative position, and it's the position that's most conducive to a breakout because it usually comes with goals, and that's what's going to grab attention. And you mentioned Samu ragdolling players in Europa League. He's already done it to Manchester United. So that's going to be a common theme. And even Inyan Kenna, who I may have butchered his last name there, when you were describing him and as the cannonball, like, that's it. It's this straight line. It's this striker that shot out of the barrel, usually on the halfway line, run in a straight line, blast anyone out the way that tries to intercept your running trajectory of where you're going, and then just absolutely smash the ball into the net with the ferocity of which a cannonball would be struck by. It's really sort of, as you said, it's the complete opposite to how you would associate La Liga being in the past. It's no longer false nines. It's just real, true, straight line power that seems to be the profile. So I think that's why a lot of people have put strikers in the top tens. And as you said, there needs to be an element of attacking the right spaces with that power and speed, and that will differentiate differentiate someone just being a physical profile and whether they can make it into the next step. But yeah, I think Samu's goals against Manchester United proved he's got that ruthlessness to attack the right areas. And then, his four goals in Spain under 21s, it just looked like he was playing a different sport.
It kind of reminded me of, you know, the picture of Romelu Lukaku playing it was Anderlecht's under 13s, I think, at one time. And it was a game against Feyenoord in a youth tournament. And obviously at the time, Lukaku had a growth spurt, to say the least, and he was sort of head and shoulders above his opponents. I felt as though with Samu playing against Malta, probably inflated in my own head because, you know, I knew how high, you know, I rate him. But again, at 6'4", he was dwarfing everybody else on the pitch. And you know, he did physically ragdoll, unfortunately, an opponent who were greatly inferior. But yeah, looking forward to seeing him at the under 21 Euros next summer, if he's still in that squad, because, you know, the head coach Santi Denia might not have the opportunity to choose him if he ends up getting fast tracked to Spain, to the senior squad, that is. My number six was your number nine, I believe. It was Elias Benseguir, and I won't go into him too much because you've already covered him very, very eloquently. But I did have a story about Benseguir, and it was first time that I came across him was the 20, you know, during the World Cup in Qatar, when a lot of teams would arrange sort of mid-season friendlies for their squads that hadn't gone away with their countries, and Monaco came to Leeds. They played at Elland Road in a friendly, and I remember Benseguir, who I hadn't heard of previously, you could tell he was slight, you could tell he was maybe on the younger side, but by no means did I think he was 17 at the time. So when I sort of did a little transfer marked search of the names that I hadn't seen in that Monaco lineup, I was really taken aback because I wouldn't say he ran the game because that would be inaccurate, it was a friendly, but he was really impactful. His touch was perfect. Technically, he was making very experienced defenders look as though they were having a real difficult time against him. So I suppose it's not really a surprise that he's gone on to do good things with Monaco so far. And I think has the potential to go on leaps and bounds. And Jake, you know, if you'd selected him higher than ninth, who's to say that he might not have ended up in the final scouted top 10? He did finish 11th, which, you know, if we're doing a 1-11, then he's in there. But
an absolute betrayal of his quality, I think. But again, he's in the list. I think, again, within the scouted 50, we've said, like, yeah, the ranking is fun. And we are going to do this year, like, power rankings and change things up. Because obviously Evan Ferguson won last year after scoring one of the most beautiful hat tricks you could ever see as an 18-year-old. Lamine Yamal had just started playing. So there's no, again, that's just the nature of like humans ranking things in the moment. At that time, there was no one could say anything else that Evan Ferguson wasn't going to be next Harry Kane, best striker in the Premier League, gets injured, doesn't score for a year almost or whatever it was. And Lamine Yamal ends up winning the Euros. He finished number two, so it's not like we completely wrote him off, but there was probably some very smug Lamine Yamal voters that didn't fall for the hat-trick trap. But I'm hoping that this year, when we do the re-ranking in December, I think is the first plan. I'm definitely going to put Ben Seguir up higher on my particular list, I think, because he's
Go on.
I was just going to say, because he's playing for a Champions League team week in, week out, and not many people had heard of him. So that platform immediately should probably, as I said, that's probably why I'd overlooked Omorodion, because I was like, yeah, he's got that profile, but he's gone to Porto, which, again, not that they're big five, but similar to how you explain Championship and Premier League, mm-hmm. maybe next year will be Omorodion's massive breakout season in my head. Because he's probably going to get signed again, might come into the Prem and score 40 goals, and that's where I would have put him. So it all depends how you sort of work it out in your own head.
I mean, just using your example there about Lamine Yamal and Evan Ferguson, obviously, in hindsight, I think everybody in their right mind would be putting Lamine Yamal ahead of Ferguson right now. But, you know, in 2019, if we'd done this over the summer of 2019, Erling Haaland was pretty much just breaking out with Red Bull Salzburg at that time. And he'd had a really good preseason, had a very, very good start to the campaign. But again, it was just Austria. You know, no one could really have foreseen just how impactful he'd be by the time that he ended up moving to Dortmund that January. That felt like a whirlwind 6 months for him. So, you know, if we'd done Scouted 50 that year in 2019, I don't think Haaland would have ended as number one. In hindsight, absolutely. There was no doubt. So, well, yeah, I think that's kind of our justification for Ben Seguir not being higher, or Omorodion or others. Who have you got on your five and four for us, Jake?
So five is Andre Santos, obviously on loan from Chelsea at Strasbourg. And then four is Jankuba Minter. Again, both of those, I think I was like, they're starting for a team, big five leagues. Andre Santos obviously has had false breakout potential with the move to Chelsea initially, and then didn't play at all. Awful loan to Nottingham Forest. But I think at Strasbourg, and who themselves, again, obviously following that sort of blue code design of just having an absolute pool of young players and hoping they all play well. I think the average age of the players used this season is 21. Which is incredible, and they're actually doing very well. So him being in that team, crashing the box and displaying the characteristics that sort of got everyone excited about in the first time round, I thought the fact he's on loan from Chelsea means he will get more attention, and the fact that he's playing very well means that that will just be doubled down. So I think that's why I ended up quite high. Again, I'm probably one of the only ones that has him in a top 10, I think. But I just, again, I'd built this narrative in my head that the Chelsea link was going to mean that he was going to get a lot of attention. And then Minte obviously came in somehow. Oh, I know Newcastle, I know there were factors that meant they had to sell, but he was the one person that you don't sell because they didn't have a right winger. And also he's one of the most direct, refreshing players that I've watched. At Feyenoord, he didn't play loads of minutes, but every time he played, it was like, attempt 10 take-ons in a game, get into the box 50 times. And again, there's certain metrics and certain player styles that I love and that will always sort of turn my head. And Minter's got all of those. And watching the first few games of him for Brighton this season, this guy, head down, not in the sense that he's got his head down and he's not seeing anyone, but just that the fact that he knows exactly what he wants to do every time he gets the ball, and that is challenge the fullback, get into the penalty area and make something happen. Yes, his final ball and his shooting and his passing can be cleaned up even more, but I think if someone's got the ability to sort of enter the box 10 times a game consistently, then they're going to be one of the most dangerous players in the league. So I think that's why, again, he made it into the real top 10. And I think, obviously, you rated him highly as well. So I think that sort of profile definitely attracted people to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think I rated him highly purely out of just a disappointment, a personal disappointment. I feel like it is such a shame for Newcastle that they weren't able to hold on to a player who is quite clearly exactly what they've needed in a very key position. And yet, for outside factors, and I'm not saying it's unfair, I think obviously everyone should abide by the profitability and sustainability rules that the Premier League enforce. I do think that, I don't know, if I was in the decision chair, I might have tried to make a case for jettisoning other members of the squad rather than Minter, who obviously, you know, I think if Minter had been in the team for Newcastle's first 7 or 8 games this season, like he has been for Brighton, I think you're looking at a very, very different a couple of games which are very different just because of that straight line ability, that directness. You know, there's bags of end product there, especially if you get it cleaned up, as you said. So yeah, we'll maybe come on to him a little bit more towards the end of the podcast, which might be an indication of where I ranked Yankuba Minter. But in terms of my number 5 and number 4, it's great timing that we're recording this. I went for number 5, Jamie Gittins, at Borussia Dortmund, who of course scored at the Santiago Bernabeu last night. We're recording the night after Real Madrid's 5-2 win over Borussia Dortmund, which obviously you saw Dortmund go 2-0 up, Gittins scoring the second one there. Again, watched a fair bit of Gittins for England's 21s whenever he's come off the bench for them. And just always looks like he's going to do something. Very tricky. You know, we've talked a lot about wingers who are very direct and, you know, head down and strikers who are, you know, power, speed, pace and going to play bully ball. Gittins, I feel, is more of a throwback in that his technical ability is great. I do like how he's very, very capable and very willing to get to the byline. You know, I don't want to go all Sean Dyche against the brick wall, utter woke nonsense, but I do like a winger who can cross, you know, a winger who can go both ways, you know, come inside, go in field, but also get to the byline, gives fullbacks a real issue. I certainly can attest to that, being a fullback myself. It's not nice not knowing which foot to put your direct opponent on. But yeah, Jamie Gittins is someone who I think, especially in the environment, you know, we talked about environment earlier on in this podcast, and you know, he's someone who has been at Chelsea, he's been at Manchester City, he's followed the lead of, you know, your Jadon Sanchos and Jude Bellingham's going over to Dortmund, and he's someone who I really think this year, because of the pathway that Dortmund provide, we're going to look at a Gittins breakout almost certainly. And then number 4 went with Ethan Nwaneri, who, I mean, that might be sacrilege to you, Jake, that I've not put Nwaneri higher. But again, you know, a 17-year-old who is as highly rated amongst a worldwide fan base like Arsenal, is as highly rated by someone like Mikel Arteta, is someone who it appeared the club were extremely, extremely keen, bordering on desperate to keep. When that discussion of, you know, contracts and contractual situations came up, I think you have to give Nwaneri his flowers, because he has been certainly at youth level, which is probably where I've seen most of him. He's certainly been head and shoulders above everybody else that he's been playing with and against, and that's a lot of that has been as a 15, 16-year-old and even younger. So Jake, I'm sure you can speak a little bit more with authority on Wanneri and possibly even Gittens. But yeah, what do you make of those two? Should I have them a little bit higher?
Well, no, I think we're in the top five now. So,
well, yeah,
if people are getting here, they're pretty good. Again, I didn't have Gittens on my personal top 10, but again, looking at what he's doing, I think the reason why he's probably got into lists as well is because all of those qualities that you highlighted, he's been displaying in like game-breaking impact off the bench as well. So similar to Duran in the sense that when people are coming off the bench and making an impact, they're not meant to do that. So when they keep doing it consistently, it's really eye-catching. Everyone's talking about it. And then all of your per 90 metrics get inflated. So people are starting to notice it. And with Gittens, I think, came off the bench twice this season to score a brace and win the game for Dortmund, or has made game-changing impact. Obviously, finally starting games now. And yeah, the speed that he has. And again, someone, I know you mentioned, goes both ways, but someone that's just got insanely high like ball-carrying numbers. So as an outlet, he's going to, every time someone watches him, he's going to be entertaining. That means more people will talk about him. And given that storied past of many English academies and the fact he is English as well, means that come January, come the summer, you'll get links to the Premier League because homegrown status plus the fact that he's incredibly talented and direct means there will be interest. And then as for Wanneri, I think a lot of the votes were done when maybe we thought he would have played more by now as well. I think the reason why I put him, I had him as number three, so the next one that we're going to talk about, because he's not going to play enough to be number two, number one. But the talent that he has, plus the team that he's breaking into, in the sense that Arsenal have challenged for the Premier League title 2 years in a row, one of the most stable first 11s. Like, if you can break into that, it means you're very good. Sadly, it seems like he's not been able to do it despite injuries to both Ødegaard and Saka. Because what's incredible about Wanneri as well, can play as a left-sided centre midfielder, drive in straight lines, carry the ball, can play as that right-sided interior, cutting onto his left, playing the needle through passes like Ødegaard, can play on the wing, can carry the ball like Saka, maybe not as explosive, but has that playmaking ability that Saka has and the dribbling ability to be able to cause an issue there. And then even for, I think he's in the under 19s now for England, I think captained them recently, he's playing up front. He's playing in a front two. Like, everyone's playing 4-4-2 now in out of possession. So it means that someone ends up front, playing on the left side there and almost playing in that profile that we mentioned earlier, like play on your orthodox side, straight line runs. I don't think I ever wrote this in any, I think I might have tweeted it, but he like plays like Podolski when he plays up front. He plays like Saka when he plays on the wing, and he plays like Ødegaard in centre mid. They're all Arsenal examples, obviously, because of my bias. But the fact that a 17-year-old can play so many different roles so well and expertly, I just thought he's surely going to play some minutes. He came on against Leicester and had a shot within 5 seconds after dribbling past three players. If he gets minutes, he's going to break out. But I'm getting nervous that he's not even going to get the minutes. So maybe he's going to look like he was higher than he should have been, or we'll move down when we do that re-ranking, because you can't break out if you don't play. And unfortunately, he's, despite all of those incredible qualities that we have. And you mentioned Mikey Moore at the beginning. Mikey Moore, also 2007, is playing because of Spurs. One being in the Europa League, in which sort of the drop in quality means that you can give more chances. And himself is playing really young 11s in that team, which is great to see from a sort of football development perspective. So again, maybe you could make cases that Wanneri, again, should have been the one that waited another year until his first team status was secure. But I think the ability he's got and the team that he could break into meant that I ranked him really highly.
Right then, we're into the top threes, and yeah, it's a case of a few players that we've discussed already, or at least mentioned already, and a couple that we haven't mentioned, but are very, very much deserving of being in their own individual top threes, i.e. the ones that Jake and I have picked, as well as Scouted's top three overall. Should we start with yours? I mean, you've just gone on with Ethan Nwaneri. You had him at number three.
Yeah.
Your second pick was Estevao Willian, who obviously, you know, is signed for Chelsea. He's very much the blueprint Clearlake signing, is he not?
Yeah, and also left-footed right winger.
There you go. Yeah, there, classic.
That's power forwards, which is the term that I'm trying to coin that no one's catching on to for all the strikers that we described, and just left-footed playmakery right wingers that score outrageous goals seem to be the most two sort of eye-catching profiles. But I was looking, obviously, we put Estevao in the Chelsea kit for the for the cover and stuff, even though I don't think he will play in this cycle in Chelsea, but he's owned by Chelsea. They've signed one of the most exciting players in the world. And I couldn't, every time I check back, I can't believe that he's one goal off being the top scorer in Brazil's top flight and has the most assists. So at 17 years old, again, this is definitely his breakout season, because he's becoming the best player in a division at 17 years old. And then when he moves to Chelsea again, he'll have that secondary breakout. But for the reasons why Endrick isn't on this list, because he's literally at Real Madrid now, everyone knows that he's good, and maybe we can revisit him when he is the starting striker. But yeah, Estevao number two, because to become the best player in your league at 17 years old, no matter what league it is absolutely incredible. And I think the reason I think I've got four 2007 players in my top 10. I think it's because I had that sort of, like, if you're this good and you're already, you could be in the next three Scouted 50 lists, then I'm going to lean towards you. But again, the athletic profile Estevao has, again, I think Steve has written a lot about him and followed him during the tournaments. Just leaning into what he said about him, like, sublime talent, freakish left foot, elastic athletic qualities, and like gasp inducing dribbling ability. I think all of those things are always going to get you on viral clips and stuff. But then when you actually see that the output matches all of those things, he's not just a football comp player. He's the most productive player in Brazil's top flight. So can't wait to see him in the Premier League, but also this season already, he's been sensational.
Yeah, looking at Estevao's numbers, I'm amazed and staggered that I've decided not to include him. But again, that's because I've not watched any of the Brasileiro, certainly not this season, and definitely not last year. So I've not had the benefit of seeing Estevao, aside from clips that have been shared on sort of Chelsea Twitter and, you know, welcome to Chelsea YouTube comps and stuff. But so I didn't feel as though I was an authority on that. But yeah, I mean, 16 goals, 11 assists, according to Transfermarkt. Again, some of those assists might be penalties won or rebounded shots. But, I mean, that's an incredible output for a player who's 17. And again, like, playing 40-plus games, it is undeniably his breakout season. You know, this is somebody who, yeah, might be coming off the bench a lot and might not be completely 90 minutes. But certainly got the trust of one of the biggest clubs in Brazil, certainly has the trust of one of the biggest clubs in England, because they've committed a significant portion. Well, to be honest, Chelsea can spend what they like, apparently, can't they? But they've still committed a lot of money to signing this player, or tying him down, shall we say, so no one else can have him. Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well with Estevao.
He started, like you're saying, he started 19 games. So Brazil, I think, obviously, it runs in a yearly calendar, but he started 19 games out of, and they've played 30, and they're second in the league. So I think he had a bit of an injury in between that. Just absolutely unreal for a 17-year-old to be doing that. And I think it's become a bit normalised. One, we mentioned Kubasi earlier, like Yamal, you're not meant to be doing that at this age. You're not meant to be that good yet. So I think that's why I voted him so highly.
For my in my top three, the player that we haven't mentioned yet is Lamine Kamara, who is another Monaco player, but came through with Metz and really caught the eye at the Africa Cup of Nations. Was that earlier this year? I think it was. It was the 2023 AFCON, but obviously held in January and February, wasn't it? Yeah. He's somebody who I really, really like. We've covered quite a few sort of central midfielders in this, you know, ostensibly central midfielders, generally speaking. But Kamara just has that everything factor about him. And I think that's reflected in his final ranking in Scouted's, you know, top 10 as well. I don't think, apart from Pavlovic, there isn't another, again, generally speaking, central midfielder who is higher than Lamine Kamara. And he's someone who, again, is a 2004, so he's at the top end of this Scouted 50 range, age range. But, you know, he was player of the tournament at the under 20 AFCON, you know, played very, very regularly for Metz, who again were relegated to Ligue 2 last season, but did more than enough to justify a big move, not even a huge money move, 15 million euros to Monaco. He's just so rangy. And I think that's something I really, really like in central midfielders. You know, he's very difficult to get the ball off. He's a good shuttling player, moving side to side, but certainly his strengths are in moving vertically, whether that's passing forwards or whether that's dribbling forwards, just carrying. I assume that this is Lou, our you know, chief analyst Lou, who's written this in the Scouted 50 list. But Kamara can run, pass, tackle, dribble, shoot, much like his compatriot Pap Mathis Sarr, and I think that's very accurate. You know, if you're coming from this, coming to this from an anglicized football viewership perspective, then I'd say the closest thing you're going to get to Lamine Kamara is Pap Mathis Sarr. And yeah, we still have to wait and see when Monaco play Arsenal, when they play Aston Villa in the Champions League, when they play, you know, Italian giants Inter. And again, he's the best thing about it is he's still only 20 years old, but it feels as though for the past 18 months, he's been one of the best midfield players in France or in French football.
Yeah, I haven't watched too much of him. I remember seeing I think he scored like a wonder goal, didn't he, at the AFCON?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Senegal didn't go very far, or he didn't play, I can't remember. But yeah, he played like two games and was the best player on the pitch, but then we didn't see him again. The fact that you've got all three Monaco players in your top 10, I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, it wasn't a conscious decision. I think it's just one of those where it came out in the end and I went, oh, actually, yeah.
Just an indicator of their, as you alluded to earlier, their incredible ability to spot or gamble as well. As you said, like 20 million on Ilian Kena and 15 million on Kamara. Kamara was more of an obvious one, but spending 20 million on an 18-year-old striker shows their willingness to put faith in that team, and they're joint top of Ligue 1, and they've got one of the top five youngest teams in Europe. So,
again, and they're all going to play as well. That was
exactly
what I was thinking.
That's what I mean. They're giving them the platform, and that, as you mentioned again, they're starting these players, and they're in the Champions League. They're fighting for the Ligue 1 title. You can't really get much higher up in terms of a platform to become breakout. So yeah, I'll be going to the Arsenal Monaco game, and I'm just as excited to see the Monaco players like in the flesh as I am, obviously hoping seeing them lose to maybe Wineri, but probably be back in the under 19s by then.
ever the pessimist.
Yeah.
Right, we've reached the top pick, certainly in yours, Jake, and the number two pick in mine, and it's no surprise, it's Pau Kubasi. It's, you know, what we mentioned earlier, 17-year-old central defender playing for Barcelona. I mean, what more can you say, really? I sound like Aaron Ramsey on Monday Night Football, but, you know, what more can you say?
Yeah. We can try and say a bit more.
Yeah, I think, this is a podcast after all.
Yeah, yeah. I think people are tuning in to hear maybe a bit more. But again, the difference between 17-year-old centre-back playing and 17-year-old striker playing, I think, is enormous. I think the pressure that's on a centre-back, as in if you make a mistake, rinsed, the fact that you have to deal with those like really energetic, massive centre forwards that are developing as a 17-year-old is incredible. I think, and again, just to touch on the fact, like, why is Kubasi in this and Endrick isn't, or whatever, because he broke out. So when we were discussing it, we were like, people know Kubasi they know that he's playing. He obviously did make his debut last season, but he'd only played. Well, his Champions League debut was against Napoli in the knockout round. He didn't play any of the group stage. Played against Victor Osimhen, put him in his pocket, is how social media will remember it. And he did very well. And then faced PSG in the next two legs and was up against Kylian Mbappe, or up against him at times, and performed very well. But I think we included him because, like, this is a season which he's the starting centre-back. He's going to play every single game. Barcelona obviously look more settled this season and obviously performing incredibly well. I think in terms of like points per game, they're the best team in Europe and he's starting every match. So we put him in because it's like in the same way that Lamine Yamal was included last year. You've maybe heard about them, but this is the season in which Kubasi establishes himself as one of the best centre-backs in Europe, not one of the best young centre-backs in Europe. People will talk about him as one of the best defenders. And as we said, if you're doing that at 17 years old for like one of the best teams, that is just straight up mental, really. And what's good about him is he's not like when Eric Garcia was breaking through and he'd get 100 passes a game. Kubasi defending against these strikers has been incredible. Obviously, we're recording this before he faces up against Harry Kane, which is something that, again, another. If he passes that test, then there's no other. He's ticked off Osimhen, Kane, and Mbappe in his first six Champions League appearances of his career. So he's showing that he can actually defend. But then you look at his passing numbers, and you're like, okay, yeah, that's typical of a Barcelona centre back. But even those are through the roof, I think. When you compare to like, so in the Monday Night Scouted stuff, I dropped this down to 2001 players. Just to still get a few of the mainstream names in almost as a benchmark. And he was top for touches, passes, progressive passing distance, long passes completed, and progressive carrying distance. So 17-year-old centre-back leading a group of 300 players that includes like William Saliba, Van der Ven, all the other good centre-backs that people are discussing. Kubasi's already ahead of them in a lot of different metrics, and as people love to say, he's ahead in the eye test as well. So yeah, I think, yeah, for me, he was obvious number one because the position he plays, age, and also the output of what he's putting out.
Yeah, I fell victim to the Brighton curse again, in that I had Evan Ferguson as my number one pick last season. I was duped by the hat-trick. In fact, that hat-trick was against Newcastle, and obviously yeah. Yankuba Minte, who we were talking about earlier, I put him as my first pick. Again, the Newcastle angle has shrouded my view here. But no, Pau Kubasi was, again, he was number two on my list. It was, for me, it was impossible to have him outside of that top three. And I'm delighted that he obviously came out on top for the overall Scout 50 list. It was interesting what you were saying there about he's boxed off Osimhen, Mbappe, Kane in his first six Champions League games. You look at the, just from a pure defending perspective, and that's without getting into the progressive nature of his game, just from a defending perspective, look at the different types of players that he's now having to deal with, like we discussed earlier about striker profiles in La Liga. And yet he's coming up trumps against all of them. You know, he's going up against these massive brutes and these straight line runners, the players who are willing to run off the shoulder. You know, and so often we don't see that at youth level, just because the physicality isn't there. You know, it's boys. You go from playing against boys to playing against men. You might go from playing against, you know, a very advanced and developed teenager for his age when you're at 15, 16 level. But the jump to go from that to not even just Barcelona B, to go straight up to the top is phenomenal. Yeah, he's someone who I think we're gonna look back on and say he's probably gonna be at the very, very top of the game from a defending perspective, and also what the prerequisites are for a modern day centre half are in 10, 15 years as being one of the best, one of the greatest. So yeah, that's mine and Jake's 1 to 10 or 10 to 1 or top 10 of
have you
the Scout 50.
Have you explicitly said that Minte was your number one there?
I've just dropped it in.
You kept alluding to it. No, I didn't know if you'd actually ever said his name, but
I was a little bit concerned just how well you put and justified. It was like your PhD thesis. You kind of argued your Kubasi number one pick. I was thinking, can't now say, and my number one was Yankuba Minte. But I had Minte as top pick. And again, we've discussed him at length. I think, like we said, once certain aspects of his game are cleaned up, he can be a double figure. He can be like a double-double Premier League winger in terms of goals and assists in a single Canada year. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. I think the jury is very much in on Pau Kubasi. Certainly it's scouted. It's been great fun compiling this and you know, going through the write-ups and coming across players that I'd never heard of before, but were in this list of 50, you know, even the ones that are much, much further down, you know, thinking of, actually, number 12, I believe, on the list was Sverre Halseth Nipan at Rosenborg in Norway. An FM, I'm led to believe, an FM favourite. Haven't played last year's edition, so can't say that myself. But players like that, loved coming across them. We mentioned Giovanni Kenda, Jan-Carlo Simic, who's obviously with Anderlecht at the moment. Oli Arblaster.
Yeah, again, another championship one where it's like championship centre midfielder starting every game. You think he's going to be...
Skipper, actually.
Yeah, of course. And what I wanted to mention about Kubasi is obviously number 10 is Dean Huijsen. Again, I don't know if I've even pronounced that correctly. Said it like Huijsen sauce, but so Spain. I was looking back at the old one. I think Yamal might have been the only Spanish player in last year's, which is incredible given their history of producing talents. In this year, I think they're the most dominant nation in it. But the more standout thing is they have Kubasi number one, Huijsen number 10. Then they also have Hector Fort, right, Barcelona right back in there. I think maybe 25. I can quickly check. 24. And then also the Valencia centre back, Jarek Gasiorowski. So Spain have four defenders. Gasiorowski is a centre back, but can play this like left back, Calafiori role. He's huge. And he probably wouldn't be great there. But Spain have literally got a back four in this scout 50. And for a team that has Lamine Yamal, right wing, Nico Williams, left wing, seem to have found their wingers that they need. Their midfield, obviously, has got Pedri, Gavi. It's crazy to think that they've now, at the right time, almost developed an entire back four. And that's without saying, like, obviously, they've still got people in the first team squad now that are good. But Kubasi and Huijsen as a... I remember Lou did a post about them playing for the under-21s in the not the international break just gone, but the one before that. Both completed 120 passes. Obviously, no clean sheet, no goals conceded. So the future is extremely bright for Spain, which it already is because they're reigning European champions. But the fact that they've got a defence coming through as well is unfair, really.
It is a little bit, yeah. If only. I would implore everybody who's listening to sign up to the Scouted Notebook, of course, because if not just because you get Scouted 50, but because you also get Jake's thoughts and his research and the things that you will not find anywhere else on Monday Night Scouted, which is an assortment of, you know, data, eye test, visuals, lots and lots of good stuff on young players across Europe. And, you know, things that we kind of in the scouted chat, we kind of get we're privy to a little bit beforehand. You know, if, for example, if Saka does this, he's the first player to have, you know, seven chances created, seven shots on target, seven completed dribbles in the first seven matches of the season, something like that. It's probably completely wrong. But Jake, tell us a little bit more about Monday Night Scouted while we do have you here.
Oh, well, that's free as well. So you have to become, obviously, a paid subscriber to get Scout 50. Mm. And obviously, you get access to both of them. So that's 100 players straight away for anything that you want to use. Monday Night Scout is just basically taking a look, watching all the football at the weekend and rambling on the stories that I find most interesting, and sort of exploring a few of these themes that we discussed today, like why are all the strikers absolutely massive now? Why are left-footed players the best? And then using sort of data to try and explore those themes a bit more, introducing numbers behind it to try and explain it. And then obviously that goes out on Monday, but Lou's bringing back his scout notes now, which is like, my stuff is very much mainstream. I'm still trying to break from my inability to not be addicted to social media after 8 years doing it. But you then get Lou's scout notes, which is like actual, like, why is this guy watching the Victory Shield in his spare time? But it helps you, it introduces you to all of these players. And as you said, we don't get to watch all of these players. That's impossible to do. But I think between all of us, and mainly Lou, watching those games, you'll see a name pop up on social media, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, search Scouted Notebook, and a year ago something was published on them. So it's just a great way to sort of start collating your own shortlist of names that you might find interesting. Again, my stuff is usually through more data-driven names, like this guy is tackling like an absolute maniac. Is he any good? Like, we'll have to wait and see. Whereas Lou's stuff is very much the pure scouting of, I watched every touch this guy did. This is my verdict. So between us, you get a bit of both, and both of those approaches played a part in Scouted 50. As I said, with me trying to suggest some players that just looked incredible. I think Nathan Zeze was one of the picks that I managed to get in, just because of like, there's a 19-year-old centre-back starting for Nantes. No one can beat him on the ground. Is that Saliba 2.0? So again, they need more video minutes behind them. But yeah, Monday Night Scouted stuff, if you like numbers backing up what you're seeing, then that's what I'm trying to do there.
Excellent stuff. And before we go, I would just like to say congratulations to our chief editor of a long time, Stephen Gnavas, who has taken up a role at a major club in recent times. So congratulations, Steve. No doubt through your appearances on the Scouted podcast, many of them there are over the years. We'll be back with more in the weeks and months to come. And do, as I say, sign up to Scouted Notebook, because there's just an absolute treasure trove of information on the next generation of young talent. I've been Joe Donaghy, joined by Jake Entwistle on this month's Scouted podcast. And this has been the Scouted 50. Bye for now. The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com.